everybody. Welcome to Day In and After Show. It's me, Lindsay Leverage, and with me is James Beckett.
You know, when I was in school, they called me the bread demon on account of all the carbs I ate. Anyway, hi, we're here.
you say red bread?
Just the bread.
I heard red bread and I was like,
I mean, red bread sounds good.
Yeah. Azuki bread, maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you're tuning in right now, we're on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. Today is our big destruction catch up. So right now there's 9 episodes of this series streaming on Crunchyroll.
I think if you count episode 0, which I haven't watched.
I was like, it takes place after the series. I'll go back to it. Yeah. But yeah, that's on Crunchyroll, and I feel like it has kind of got slept on. And yeah. I contribute that to like 2 factors. One is it premiered in like mid season, right? Like May? What? Yeah, it premiered like in late May.
It was late. It was the same, later than Yatagarasu, but I think a very similar thing. Like people had already kind of settled in to their shows for the season, and they slept on this one.
Yeah, so it didn't get, you would think that if something premiered outside of like the series glut that it might be able to get more attention. But in this case, I think it just, like you're saying, people just sort of get settled into their watch list and then don't add things on later. So for LFR, if you just came in, so we're going to be talking about Destruction today. The other reason I think maybe is that there was some early sort of wariness about coming into it because there were all the issues with the subtitles.
The subtitle track episodes weren't translating the on-screen text that was only in the dub. Mm-hmm. And the subtitles were dub titles, which is, you know,
which is still true. Yeah, that's still true. They did correct the on-screen text issue starting with episode 7, but they have not gone back and fixed the earlier episodes. I know this because I was awake at 6 a.m. and watched episodes 2 through 9 at that point in time. So as of, July 30th, 6 p.m. Pacific, they have not fix that yet.
Which is weird because Crunchyroll is usually, I mean, honestly,
they didn't do the subtitles for this.
And I figured that had to be why, because all the in-house subs, I've mentioned this on the podcast before. I love how above and beyond a lot of their localizers and their subtitle programmers go to make the on-screen text not just like functional, but actually usually pretty pleasant to look at. It almost reminds me of back in the day with fan subs, or they'll work the subtitle into the image, or they'll have it mirror the color or the font of the Japanese text so that it gives you the same impression, which is more work than technically you have to do, but I think it makes for a better experience. So it's a shame that they can't apply that process here because, like you said, it's out of house.
Yeah. And so like to get some of the nitpicks out of the way, the reason that's such a big deal with this particular series is because it utilizes actually a lot of on-screen text. And that's a carryover from Inio Asano's manga, which has some like amazing typesetting within the art itself. So that was the anime trying to replicate some of that. So whenever they switch places, there's like big on-screen text that tells you what the location is. So for the first 6 episodes, you just kind of have to infer what that is. And there's also a couple plot threads that are carried out via like text conversations, and that on-screen like chats, those aren't translated either. Richard Eisenbeis, who's been reviewing the episodes for this, if you go over to his reviews on Anime News Network, he includes some notes there for context, because he's able to understand the Japanese dialogue on his own and read the on-screen text, so he can help a bit in that way. But regardless, you can still get through the show more or less, without missing a ton up to episode 7 when that when that's finally fixed. So,
and let me say too, because I actually, other than episode one, which we covered, it feels like forever ago now.
May. Yeah.
Months ago. Episodes 2 through 9, I actually watched dubbed. Mm-hmm. And not only did that make it so that it was, I could follow the on-screen text, which was why I started watching it dubbed. But I actually think it's a really good dub.
Oh yeah.
I know that I'm sure that there are people listening to this that are still kind of very purist when it comes to, you know, subs versus dubs. And normally I try to watch something subbed first. And then if I ever go back, I'll go back to the dub.
Yeah. But
for something like this, where, you know, we're catching up on so much material and so little time, the dub just makes it a lot easier for me to follow along and internalize.
Yeah.
But it's really good. And I think to me, and we will talk about this, I'm sure, so much of this show lives and dies on how relatable and human the girls that we're following throughout the show are.
Yeah.
And I think the dub really captures that. It makes everything sound, you know, naturalistic and, you know, it never sounds especially stilted or awkward, at least nothing that I caught. So.
Yeah, the girls don't interact in an overly formal manner either. Like, it's very, like, kind of loose lingo kind of stuff going on. Now, that's based on the subtitles, which is based on the dub script, which, so I can't say, like, how accurate that is to the spoken Japanese dialogue necessarily, but I do prefer that sort of feel to how these characters are talking to one another. Mm-hmm. It does it gives a lot of personality to Ouran and Kadore, especially because they're kind of like the prime two in the middle of this show, and then everyone else is sort of auxiliary to their relationship. So the feeling of familiarity between them is really important. And Ouran is a pretty unique character
in
of herself. I mean, she's kind of got like that Chuni aspect going for her, but it's not in like the way that you typically see that manifest in these sorts of characters. Like, she's over the top and, you know, ranting and raving about, you know, capitalism and war and all these other sorts of things. But it feels like the same sort of like jokey kind of acerbic humor that I hear from teenagers now.
Yes. You know? That's what I was going to say, is she doesn't feel like a jaded 30-year-old's like idea of what an edgy teenager or a kind of self-consciously sort of over the top performative teenager is like. Mm-hmm. She genuinely just reminds me of some of the more, let's say, kind of spirited, nerdy girls that I've had in my own classrooms where, I hate to use the term cringy, so I'm going to say it can be a lot to kind of process, but at the same time, the earnestness is kind of, it's, you got to respect it if nothing else. Like, she is who she is.
A lot of drooling in this show, especially from Ouran, and just that was something I think it's even more present in the manga, because I remember reading the first volume, I'm like, this girl is constantly oozing what is going on.
I mean, even in the anime, there especially I think after we get back to the present from our flashback episodes, where her change in personality is a lot more evident.
Yeah.
There were times where I was like, someone needs to take her to a doctor. Like, she has some kind of like glandular infection or something.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't healthy. Like,
I started to notice that like secondary characters are also like, just will have like a tear, like just attached to their eye duct at various times and stuff though too. So it's partially a stylistic choice. But, you know, before we kind of like get into those details, I guess we should probably talk about, you know, what is this show? What is going on?
That's a great question.
So like right off the bat, again, this is an adaptation of Inio Asano's manga. It is definitely got the flavor of an Inio Asano manga, although I don't think it has, at least up to this point, as much just nihilism to it. that some of his other works do, right?
That Kadode flashback was a lot.
It was, yeah. There's definitely some dark stuff that comes up in this show, and some, you know, we're going to be getting into that.
But you're right that it's not sustained.
Yes.
You get these kind of big jolts of bleakness or violence.
Yeah.
Especially when the otherworldly aliens are concerned. There's a lot of that happening too. But you also have just a lot of really sweet, kind of nice, wholesome moments. Lots of dinner table scenes where you just have these girls, their friends, sometimes their family, just gathering, you know, together and enjoying each other's company, or fighting, or both.
Yeah.
But it feels very human. You know, being a human is both occasionally really sad and upsetting and tragic, and occasionally really funny and silly and filled with ooze. And I think the show strikes a good balance. It's never, I would say it never becomes like overbearing. It's not like watching, when I was watching Chernobyl on HBO. Okay. Where
I've been telling myself I need to watch that.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
I think it's mandatory. Like, you know, if anyone out there is wondering, like, what are the top five dramas from the last 10 years I need to watch? I'd say Chernobyl is up there. But
yeah,
that show is so bleak and so upsetting and so just unrelentingly staring into the face of humanity's worst impulses and instincts that I had to put it down for like months.
Yeah.
there was one episode where I was like, nope, I can't. Like, this is just making me feel bad.
Yeah.
And Dead Dead Demon never does that. At least not yet.
Yeah. Yeah. It hasn't done that yet. And to preface Dead Dead Demon, I mean, it is kind of dealing with a situation on the scale of Chernobyl, but we're dealing with like a sci-fi situation. So to give audience some blanket context, this, and we will be getting into spoilers. So if you haven't watched the show, you might want to come back and listen after you've seen the first 9 episodes. Mm-hmm. But just as like boilerplate plot synopsis, you know, we have a group of high school girls. They're just about to graduate high school and they're trying to decide where they're going to go to university. They're all kind of a little eccentric. We already kind of explained Oran. Kadode is her best friend. They've been best friends since they were like elementary-ish school age. And then they later met another pair of friends who have been friends for a really long time. That's Rin and I. And then they have a new friend that they met in high school named Kiho. And everything would be more or less like a normal coming of age, Oh Maidens in Their Savage Season sort of setup, with the exception that a few years ago, a giant alien spaceship, a mothership, it is huge, by the way, like I would say
several city blocks
appeared over Tokyo. And no one knows why it's there. We don't really start to kind of understand why it's there until the end of episode 9, but no one knows why it's there. And humanity in all of its infinite wisdom decides that, or I should say the Japanese government decides to pair up with the United States, as we still do regularly now, and let them kind of handle it. And the United States' response is to drop an atom bomb on it.
What?
But, it doesn't work. But it does kill, I think, say like 150,000-ish Japanese people.
Yeah.
Because there's radiation. There's now like districts of Tokyo that are like non-accessible because of they've been irradiated.
Is that why Oren's so oozy? Like, is it? Like, do they all have like minor radiation sickness? Is that like
that's probably not the reason why, but also valid question. That is a valid question.
I mean, like genuinely, like, is it like, you know, are we supposed to constantly be thinking as these characters is kind of falling apart a little bit, like physically?
Yeah, maybe. Elevar says, did they not evacuate? No, they don't. And actually, there's a bunch more incidents because they don't ever even in Evangelion, they evacuated people before releasing the units to fight the angels. That is not happening here for whatever freaking reason. So, over 100,000 people died. It's referred to throughout the series as, I think, the August 31st incident, because that's the date that it happened. Mm-hmm. So, and there's a lot of political stuff kind of that's going on in the background in relation to that incident, you know, people being kind of pro, not pro alien, but like pro diplomacy with the aliens, because the aliens have still never attacked anyone, versus, you know, blow it up, get it out of the sky. So, I mean, that's kind of like going on in the background. There's protests, all sorts of things going on. And since that incident, the mothership has been sending little scouting type saucers out. Yeah. And we see pretty early on that these are manned aircraft, but the aliens are about the size of like a three to four year old child ish. Mm-hmm. They appear to wear, they kind of, their outfits kind of look like old diving helmets.
Yeah.
With colorful t-shirts. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of,
they're very child coded. Like they're, you know, they're stubby and they're kind of awkwardly moving. Like they look like, you know, toddlers, you know,
yes,
big oversized shirts and stuff.
Yeah. So everything.
Although I had a question, because I was, do they, in the Japanese, is there ever any, at least up until the most recent episode and with the one character that we'll talk about that Karure and Oran meet. But like, you know, usually when the little alien guys are running around or you catch glimpses of them, do they translate or give any kind of like, you know, approximation of what they're saying to each other?
Oh yeah. All their dialogue's subtitled in the Japanese version. So you know everything that they're saying.
You see, that's fascinating, because in the English dub, until the most recent episode, with the big attack that happens at the end, all of their dialogue is completely unintelligible.
Oh yeah. Richard pointed out that in the movie version, it also wasn't translated in Japanese either. So for some reason, you have to watch the Japanese version's English subtitled TV episodes to get that. But so for those who don't know, this television series, which I believe is supposed to be 18 episodes, originally premiered in Japan as movies, and then that's, you know, again, like a lot of episodes come out of a couple movies. So there's stuff in the TV series that was not in the movies at all. Like there's an entire episode where Ai goes on a date, and like most of that is not in the movie.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of new content as well, if you somehow happen to have seen the Japanese film versions. But it is subtitled.
Weird. I mean, I think it's interesting. I could see it both ways, because you know, on the one hand, like the giving them the translated dialogue humanizes them, and I think communicates a lot of what the show is getting at when it comes to the way that people will kind of willfully just pretend that certain groups aren't human and just get to be killed willy-nilly because they have the gall to exist and, you know, potentially cause some issues or some damage. But then you see the responses. So anyway,
there's a Black Mirror episode about that.
Yeah.
There's a Black Mirror episode about everything, but
I mean, it's, you know, it's a tale as old as time, as far as sci-fi goes, right? The idea that, you know, the aliens are, I mean, you can look at the alien invaders as foreign refugees or foreign, you know, invaders. There are a lot of stories that have taken that analogy and run with it in a very kind of straightforward, hoorah, kill the baddies way.
Yeah.
And then there are a lot of stories, especially in recent decades, that take those tropes and explore, well, what actually happens when we have scary foreigners that come to our shores, whether it's Japan or America or any other, you know, developed kind of economically, you know, top tier nation.
Yeah.
How do they actually treat the foreigners that come to their shores a lot of the time?
And that's like one of the, I feel like that theme is also like a recurring, one of the political points going on here, because throughout these 9 episodes, the Japanese government manages to forge, you know, legislation, not forge sounds like they faked it, but I mean, they create legislation and increase funding and budget for this company called SES, which is making originally made like consumer electronics, like toy robot dogs and like seek and tell thing, like that your kid would play with, but has now moved into large scale weapons manufacturing, which is, I feel like that's like a whole thing that we talk about, right? But they start giving them funding because they come up with a new form of weapon that is supposed to work against these alien spacecraft. And we see like through talks that not only is this supposed to be like a security measure for Japan, but it's also a way for Japan to assert more control and cut its reliance
on the United States
for military power, which ties into a lot of political discourse that was going on probably around the time this manga was coming out. I mean, it still goes on now and it probably dates back further, and that has to do with, you know, like when Shinzo Abe was alive and talking about amending the Japanese constitution, because in the Japanese constitution post-World War II, they're only allowed to have a self-defense force but not any kind of like actual force going out. And that was, you know, something that we, the United States, strong armed them into as part of the agreement when the Eastern Theater was. So, I mean, so there's that history is kind of baked into some of the stuff that's going on in the background here. Right. But so we've got all of that. And I just showed a picture. I'll bring it back up again because I realize I haven't been doing the visuals because we've already been so involved in the discussion. Yeah. But these are our girls here. So that's Rin standing tall in the middle in the Lolita outfit. And then from top to bottom, we have Kiho on the right of the image. Immediately left is Ai. Directly under Ai is Ouran. And directly to the right of to the right of the image is Kadode. So that's our core group. And up until this point, like, you know, it is just sort of about their various little relationships. Kiho gets a boyfriend, right? And they're kind of just all lovey-dovey. But all, it seems like every sort of relationship development has sort of a darker aspect to it, including
I mean, man, it's I was talking about this with one of my colleagues. I was at a big teacher an AP education seminar thing where we had to do a bunch of development, and so I was working with a lot of other teachers, and we were having conversations about you know, ways that we've had to kind of adjust our instruction, especially for like the very current generation of students. You know, tail end of Gen Z, Gen Alpha, whatever, you know, you want to call them, specifically just because, you know, their understanding of like pre and post 9/11 history is completely theoretical, you know?
They
can't even picture a pre 9/11 world. And obviously they've lived through their fair share of, you know, catastrophic status quo altering events, but watching this show, I felt like if I wanted to explain what it was like growing up in like the 2000s, 2010s, as a young adult, kind of burgeoning into adulthood, then I would probably show them this because you know, circumstances are a little different. Like the spaceship and America nuking it is not exactly the same as what happened September 11th in New York, but the way that everyone is essentially behaving as if the last seal of the book of the apocalyptic scrolls from the Book of Revelations have been opened while simultaneously just going about business as usual, that is 100% what life felt like back in, you know, like from 2002 to like, I mean, you know, a large way now, but you know, 2002 to like when I graduated, in, you know, 2010, I graduated from college in 2013. And, you know, the fact that like, on the one hand, everything is different. People are at war, people are dying, you know, there are all of these people talking about how, you know, the world will never be the same. And, you know, this could be the beginning of World War III, and, you know, over and over and over. And then, at the same time, people just being more online than they used to be.
Yeah.
People being more, people getting more and more divided politically. I mean, not even 9/11, right? Like you can, you know.
I was going to say the same thing about the Capitol insurrection.
Yeah.
Though I remember that, like when right? the Capitol, like there, yes. there are like two times in my life. Now when 9/11 happened, I was 14. Mm-hmm. I was a freshman in high school. And then, you know, the Capitol insurrection was only 3.5 years ago.
I think you mean 30 years ago?
Right.
Emotionally speaking?
Emotionally speaking, ago? Right. Yeah. So, I mean, and I remember both times, the first thing I did was like call someone, like mm-hmm. as a millennial who does not enjoy phone calls, as most of my generation is wont to do, those were both times where I was like, I need to call my mom.
Yeah.
Now, in the case of 9/11, my mom was there, obviously. Like, she woke me up and got me out of bed to come watch the news. But
my dad drove me to school and didn't even tell me what was going on.
Yeah, I still went to school that day. School was not canceled. What were we doing?
Oh, I went to school.
At the time,
everyone in my class was crying. Mm. I didn't know why.
Yeah.
I live in Colorado, so obviously my first thought was, oh, and I was nine, right? And
yeah.
So was there like another Columbine? And then, you know, obviously.
Not yet, James.
I know. Not yet. But obviously every TV in the school was on, and eventually someone explained it to me. And my dad, the way he explained it was like, yeah, I mean, honestly, as it was happening, I didn't even really know what to say. You know, like, yeah. What was I supposed to tell you? Like, the world has changed forever. In ways I can't even really understand.
See, it is actually interesting that you say that, because I don't actually recall specifically my parents trying to talk with me about it. I watched CNN. I was in a magnet school program that didn't start till like 9:30 in the morning, compared to other like high schools that started at like 7. Yeah, well, I was only there for 2 years. I made a mistake and went to a regular high school after that. So I had to be at school by 7 like everybody else. So, so I had extra time in the morning, maybe compared to a lot of my peers, to just try and eat a bowl of cereal, which is what I did, and watch the news. So I remember going into class already knowing, like, because they had already brought up Osama bin Laden by that point, and like the, because he had previously orchestrated a bombing of a U.S. Military ship at some other point earlier, yeah. You know, like. And so I remember going into one of the classes and being one of the more informed people at the time. And my teacher actually let me explain what I had seen on the news, because I had spent like an hour watching CNN. But anyway, so yes, this feels very much akin to that. You have, you know, these girls are dealing with all sorts of things. Like Kadode's mom, for instance, is like, she's gone completely on like... she's like probably pseudo extremist, right? So like Kadode's parents eventually split up, and her mom has a boyfriend now who she's going to live with.
I think it's worth pointing out, her dad just disappeared.
Yeah.
Like he just vanished the day that the ship arrived.
Yeah.
He had some like, you know, again, it felt very 9/11 where it's like, mm-hmm. you know, like things are going to be different now. Like everything's going to be different. I got to go take care of some things. I'll be back. Never comes back.
Right.
And there are a few people that happened to, right? Like, and that hasn't really been addressed or explained.
I think it's supposed to be in episode 0, which again,
yes, like, we haven't seen,
which we haven't watched. But yeah, so I mean, so her dad's disappeared. Her mom, ever since, wears at least in the anime, seems to wear a face mask 24/7, as well as like lab gloves, or not gloves, glasses. So she's like, you know, immune to any kind of spill or contamination. I think she tries to make Kadode, like, if I remember in episode 1, it's kind of meant, she tries to make her eat a lot of weird stuff, I think, for her health. Like she's very concerned about, yeah. So she's kind of gotten,
well, she's doing that thing where you know, she feels like the world is going out of control.
Yeah.
And so she is like taking absolute control over everything in her life, although that does seem to exclude having a relationship with your daughter.
Right.
They do right. not get along.
And she's got, you know, a guy who may become her stepdad who is, he seems like he means well, but is like very interested in, you know, like having her accept him as her father, which yeah, he's I mean, guy. Yeah, he's that
guy. I hope that someday like, you'll be able to call me dad.
Yeah.
Like, say, bro, hey, geez. Future stepdads of the world that may or may not be listening to this. Don't do that to your kid.
No. I mean, if you come into their life early enough, they may choose to do that. And if they do, sure. that's a beautiful thing, right? Yeah. But, you know, again, but she's 18.
Yeah, if they're already basically a fully grown adult.
Yeah.
And also their dad disappeared under very dubious circumstances that yeah. obviously no one has emotionally processed. Dealt with.
Yeah.
Don't
yeah.
just be like, hey, kid, you can call me Pop Pop.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah. He wears like a varsity jacket too. Like he's very like, yeah. I want to come to all your soccer games. But yeah. again, she's
like, I'm a grown woman.
Yeah. And well, you can tell she's got some hangups, I think, on this issue, because one of the things that's lingering around Kodode for a lot of these early episodes is she has a crush on her teacher, who is a total sleazebag.
Yeah. He's a crush not on a good person who does not in any way try to shut it down at all.
Yeah. I mean, he makes like a couple of comments like don't even joke about that or whatever. But
then he immediately is like, hey, when you graduate, we could be friends with benefits.
Yeah, like, which is like gross.
Don't say that.
Don't say that. Richard pointed out in his review, and Richard has experience, he taught English in Japan in high school, I believe at a high school level, that you don't ever let your students come to your house. No, just straight up. Never.
No, especially not as a man. No. I'm sorry.
No.
One of the first things I learned as a male teacher that is not old enough to be people's fathers, and that would in and of itself probably provoke some unwanted attention. Yeah. But one of the first things I learned is I can't even compliment my students in certain ways.
Yeah.
I'll never forget one of my first day student teaching.
Yeah.
My mentor teacher was kind of, you know, show me the ropes and, you know, giving me just general tips. And she was talking about, you know, and yeah, we have those students that don't want to engage and blah, blah, blah. And what I try to do is I always try to, if I can't compliment them on the work they're doing, I'll compliment their outfit or I'll compliment their shoes or I'll compliment this or that. Yeah. And then she paused for a second and she said, actually, you can't do that. Don't ever do that. Don't ever tell a student that she looks nice or that you like her shirt or anything. Don't ever say anything about how they look ever, because you're a man. When I do it, it's seen as motherly. When you do it, it could be seen as predatory.
Yeah.
You don't got to tell me twice.
I'm
not looking at what anyone's wearing.
Yeah.
They're all wearing potato sacks.
Yeah, I was going to say burlap sacks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is like an unfortunate state of things, but it's just like, it's protection for yourself. And in some ways, you know, you don't know what kind of situations some of your students are coming from and what their social skill levels are and how they might interpret something innocuous or.
Oh, I know people who ended up having to they had to have students move to different classes because the students got too attached.
Oh, and yeah.
It became like, I can't do this.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's kind of an ongoing thing. They do go on a date at one point after she has graduated. But her, like, it's so obvious that, like, their romance experience is completely different, right? As far as we know, Kodode has never had a boyfriend of any kind. Has no, like, experience with the physical aspects of being with someone. Like, I don't know that she's ever been kissed, held someone's hand, you know, made out, anything with any of her peers. So to like be going on a date with a fully grown
ass man.
Yeah. I mean, we don't know his age, but like, he's not cute. He's not depicted in a way to make you think he's like young either. Yeah. Like I could just as easily see them like pegging him at like 38, like my age or something. It's just
and it's not like they have, you know, it's I'm trying to think, what was that one? There was that one like from a few seasons back, the one she was like a high school girl, and I can't remember if it was her teacher or just like an older guy she worked with or something. Do you remember? It was like
after the rain.
Yeah.
It was her boss. Yeah.
It was her boss, right?
Okay. Yeah. They like worked at a diner type family restaurant, I think. Yeah. Yes.
Now, and in that case, right, we all obviously acknowledge not cool.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, power dynamics, all that. But if we're talking about like a romantic fantasy, a fictional story, you can at least, you know, there's a lot you can get away with if the characters have chemistry and are cute and the story's well written, you know.
Yeah.
This guy sucks.
Like, yeah, no, he just sucks. He has
a girlfriend. Condescending.
He's condescending. Yeah, he has a girlfriend early on in the series who we find out is working at that weapon manufacturer I mentioned earlier that's making a bunch of weapons to shoot down the spacecraft. Also, I think we mentioned this in the first episode. He's actually skeezier than the dub titles let on, because there was a line change. When she goes over to his house and then changes her mind to leave, they translate a line, or the line is, well, that complicates things in the dub. What he actually says in Japanese is, well, I guess I can look at porn sites instead. So he was like fully expecting to get some and cheat on his girlfriend. Now, they've broken up by episode 9, not because he sucks, but because she works for said weapon manufacturer, and they're starting to hint that she knows, people within that company know, that something far more catastrophic is about to happen, and that they're all going to die.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's when we start getting, and this is where the series, maybe we can build on some of the more shocking parts. So this is the more spoiler heavy section. We find out in a later episode that it's like a matter of months until the annihilation of humanity. That just like shows up as on-screen text.
Yeah.
And we start finding out more about these aliens and more about, also that there may be some timeline fuckery going on. That's the only way I can like put it together, because we get a couple of flashback episodes, right? So up until this point,
we do want to point out, we don't even know if they're flashbacks, because they're immediately preceded by Oran having an encounter with an alien who is possessing the body of a supposedly dead pop star.
Right. Yes.
And that alien can materialize, you know, he can like teleport, right? He's got magic alien powers. He shows up to Oran, and he says something or something happens that activates this thing that happens to her, where, you know, it gets all, you know, Doctor Who-y, you know.
Yeah. It starts looks like this. I'll put it up on screen, but it kind of looks like, that's why it's like timeline.
He calls her a shifter, right?
Yes.
He says, oh, she must be a shifter. And so we don't even know if it's a flashback or if she literally just popped over to another timeline or something. It's not
right. Clear. Yeah. So, I mean, and that opens up a bunch of different interpretations, because what happens in this flashback or earlier in time period, right? All the characters are younger. So let's just put it that way. Now, in the version of events that we had been told up to that point, there are major character differences, because in the versions of the girls that we've seen up till then, one of the key memories is Kadore says that she was bullied in school. And they referred to her as demon and stuff like that. And that Oran stood up for her and always came for her. And that's why Oran is her absolute. That's what she refers to her as, her absolute, a couple times throughout these series of episodes. And then we get these earlier in time sequences, and that doesn't happen. Actually, she just kind of sits back and watches. And furthermore, she's much more shy, much more reserved. She's like complete kind of personality.
She's a different person. Like,
she's
doesn't even seem like the Oran that we know at all.
Yeah. Yeah. So at first when I was watching these episodes, I was thinking, oh, well, you know, maybe like she gained confidence and then began developing more in this way. Right. Cause there's these girls here are bullies. And there's also a group of boys that are bullies. The boys and the girls are actually working together. Like the girls are,
it's a freakishly well-organized pyramid scheme of bullying.
Yeah, like they have a website dedicated to it, like a forum, basically.
It's a conspiracy of bullying. Yeah. The girls are like, all right, boys, now we can't tease her too much or the parents will find out what we're doing. And it's like, where the hell
Yeah.
Are the adults?
what is going on here? So that's going on. And then they have sort of like a summer school situation. And also in this scenario, Kadore has a mom. Or not Kadore, I'm sorry. Oran has a mom, which we've never seen her mother in the current situation that we've had. For all we know, her brother
is like so hot, the girls are throwing their panties at him.
Yeah, that's also happening. But I mean, he also could have just gained weight. I don't really know, you know, if.
But it's more that he seems like a different person. Like, yeah,
kind of. Like, he still has that sort of flaunty confidence that's like not really backed up by anything in this version, as well as the version we're more familiar with. But.
But did you also notice we never see? I'm pretty sure we never see Kadore's dad. Right, like we see her mom shows up for that one scene.
Yeah,
where she slaps her, but I don't think her dad shows up at any point.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, so her dad's absent, and in this one, we don't know if Oran's dad's absent, but she mentions her mother is the one who's making her go to like tutoring.
Yeah.
So there's like there's these variances happening here. So we get a couple episodes of this, and this is where the series also gets really, really dark. So after she's seen this alien inhabiting the appearance or dead body or whatever of this pop idol, and if he sneezes, his face goes opposite directions, like his face is cut into hemispheres, northern, southern hemispheres, and if he sneezes, they unalign, and then he has to like jack his face back into place. It's weird. But they meet their own alien here. And this, again, could be like an alternate version of the timeline because they start seeing a UFO.
Yeah.
And no one else.
Years before any of this stuff is even supposed to happen.
Right. And it looks kind of like a crumpled up paper ball is kind of similar to it. And the spaceships that we see throughout kind of take different forms. Like there's the giant mothership. There's the kind of little pod looking ones that they send out regularly. And at one point we see one that looks like a Rubik's Cube. But in this case, it looks like a crushed paper ball. And they end up finding an injured alien on the beach during their summer, right? And it gets very like E.T. meets Doraemon, like specifically like Doraemon exists in this world as like a, only it's referred to as Isebeon. Is that it?
Yeah.
Isebeon.
He's a mushroom. Instead
yeah, he's a mushroom
little,
dude.
Little cat thing.
But the like the art is drawn in Fujio style on purpose. He has gadgets. Some of the gadgets that the aliens really do have resemble Doraemon objects, even the like propeller head thing that lets them fly and stuff like that. So they find their own. They bring him back to Kadore's house. They end up putting him inside of her Isebeon doll. And he just wants to observe them in this very Kyubey-esque sort of way, right? And he gives them access to different little... gadgets for various things. One of them that he gives Oran is supposed to make her confident, but like it's like almost like a pill to swallow, but she doesn't take it, or at least we never see her take it. But the one that ends up causing a bunch of trouble is this kind of magic, like magnetic wand.
It's like a magic screwdriver from Doctor Who, basically. Like,
yeah,
you know, it can kind of manipulate, you know, metal and you know,
yeah, stuff like that, and it causes and Kadore ends up basically going vigilante with it.
She goes full Kira.
She goes full Kira with it. And she starts straight up killing people in pretty horrible ways. Like she kind of gets like this edgy vibe to her. We're talking to a pregnant lady. She accidentally derails a whole train, killing a whole bunch of people, is racked with guilt over it, and then decides the only way to like make up for that is to then go on a killing spree of people that she deems like evil or like, and
I was gonna say, I have the in the dub, they translated her little forum post.
Oh,
that,
yeah,
that she's well, when she's chatting, and she's her screen name is a truly scary no name 200,
right? Which is like very childlike. And for those of you who aren't watching but are listening, the forum post she makes says, is there any other fifth graders out there looking for gory images? I guess not. Ha ha ha. Conversations from others in today's class about a cool new song or cute outfits. That's about it. On the other hand, I look at a corpse floating in this sea of electrons and chat about it. It's a brilliant world. Am I crazy? Is that a compliment? And it kind of like, she's just, this is very unlike Kadode that we know, right? Kadode.
No, she's like, she's behaving in a downright like sociopathic manner. Like,
yeah.
Cause she does accidentally hurt those people on the train, but she right. like, she murders people like point yeah. blank, like, you know, not even in like a, you know, at one point she crushes a bunch of people with a big giant like TV fixture for a concert arena. She right. shoots supposed to be the prime minister of Japan in the heart with a yeah. screw.
Yeah. And this is like another alternate timeline thing. The guy who ends up being prime minister in what we've been seeing up to now in this sort of flashback thing, he's maybe like the labor secretary or something. He survives the train crash. And then she comes to his hospital room and basically shoots him and kills him in his hospital room. The stuff with the concert's really messed up because basically there's like some gossip chattering about this pop group. It may be the same pop group that, you know, like members die in the current timeline that we know. But one of the guys, like, I don't know, he like cheated or he did something kind of,
maybe he slept with a fan. I don't know if they got
something
like
in poor taste or yeah. whatever. And so
she called him a pervert.
Yeah. That's all I know, so. Yeah. So Oran doesn't want to go to his concert anymore. So Kadode decides that means she can go to the concert venue and like drop the giant overhanging screen that, you know, hangs over the stage down onto the stage and just like get the whole thing canceled.
Yeah.
That way. And it's just, like,
and that one, I think that I might need to correct myself. She has a line where she says, "I was careful," so it maybe sounds like she didn't kill anyone.
Yeah, she implies that no one died. That she was careful to make sure it didn't fall on anyone, so no one was killed, and it just got the concert canceled. But it was still, you know, extremely dangerous. So yeah, all of that comes to a head, and they get Kadode and Oran get in a huge fight. And
oh yeah, well, Kadode almost like kills their class.
Yes, right. Yeah, you're right.
She goes carry on them for a second.
They confront her because one of them saw her on the roof during the time the train incident happened, and they're able to kind of connect that she's at these places. And so, she goes carry and basically like puts all of the class furniture up in the air and basically tells them like, none of you move, none of you are going anywhere. I could kill all of you if I wanted to. Just completely insane. And so
as a teacher working in America, honestly, it made me feel very uncomfortable. It was very, you know, it felt very, I mean, speaking of Columbine, right? Like,
yeah,
not very far removed from.
Yeah. LFR asks how old, in this flashback, they're in fifth grade. So yeah, they're like 10 or 11. Through most of the timeline that we're spending with the characters, they're like 17 to 18 years old. So yeah, they have this big fight breakup. Not unexpectedly, Kadode has to leave school because, I mean, she terrified her entire class. So her mom is going to make her move and take like somewhere else. And this all culminates in Kadode killing herself in front of her Oran by jumping off her school's roof. And it also looked like she maybe like sheared her hair or something. Like there were
I thought maybe she like had to be like,
oh, she had to be institutionalized. She had to be institutionalized. Yeah.
Or maybe they were doing like shock therapy or something.
Yeah. They were trying to convince her that everything she remembered about the alien and whatnot wasn't real. And so, and point out again, the alien is present while all this is happening. He just kind of watches it. This is what all the aliens look like. So they do consistently look like this throughout the entire series. So this is what he looks like when he finds them. And then I thought we had and then here is, this is the not Goemon manga, right? So that's, this mushroom guy here is Isabeyan. And so she puts him in a doll that resembles that. And it's got like just a hole somewhere where his eye is peeking through. And he just continues watching everything from this point forward. And makes it sound like it's like he's observing what happens, and it will somehow inform a choice that they make as far as what the aliens do in regards to humanity. So
thanks Kododa.
Yeah. But none of the things we see that happen in this appeared to have happened in what we're watching now, right? Because obviously the labor secretary guy didn't die and he's prime minister. Kododa is not dead. Oran seems, again, like a completely different person. Hiroshi is, personality seems kind of similar, but is a much larger man in this version compared to
He's like a full-on hikikomori, right? Like
he leaves the house. He doesn't have a real job, but he doesn't leave the house a lot, and he will stay in his room for days at a time, but he's not like a full-on shut-in.
That's fair.
And he interacts with his family. He interacts with Kododa when she comes over, and it shows that he meets a woman that he was talking to on social media. Now this is, again, lost if you only watch the Japanese version because the screen text isn't subtitled, but he basically came across like her ticket to take her college exam on a train. She left it on a train on accident and he found it and then found her, and then they've been chatting and then he returns it to her. So, he leaves the house, he goes places. So I wouldn't call him a hikikomori. He is maybe a neet, though, not in education training or employment. Those are all big differences. And we also see, it's kind of a blink and you miss it, but one of the girls that was a bully during these scenes is giving the class speech during the graduation ceremony.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
Yeah.
Which is weird because everyone has such unique faces.
They do,
it's,
yeah.
It's everyone, very hard to confuse anyone for anyone else. But
yeah, both the people and dogs/cats are very amusing.
I love the art style of this anime. Can I just say?
Yeah.
We've been talking about how interesting and dense the plot is and the characters, but this show is just a real treat to watch just on a purely visual level. Like, it's incredibly well directed. You can tell that it had the chops to stand up as a cinematic experience.
Yeah.
The animation is remarkably consistent. It never treats its audience like it's about, they're babies that need the keys jingled in front of them.
Yeah.
It's willing to just linger on shots and let characters do their thing. And it's just really, really, really fun to watch. It's not an easy watch. I think that might be another reason why it's been a little slept on.
Yeah.
The show is treating its audience like adults. And it's definitely, expecting you to pay attention. It's expecting you to be engaged. I had to, honestly, if I'm being honest, I had to rewind a few times because I fell into the trap of, pulling out this stupid phone and getting distracted by it. And even with the dub, I'm like, crap, I just missed two or three scenes and now I no longer know what's going on.
Yeah.
So the show demands a lot from you, but it's really, really rewarding.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. So I think since we're getting close to the end, I do want to kind of recap the stuff with the aliens that we get towards the very end. So one thing to note is that this is another reason why I think maybe he gained weight, because she has in this photo, he's thinner. That's Hiroshi, her brother.
Yeah.
But it's in this timeline that she gets this particular device, which she doesn't know how to use it. Well, oh, maybe it depends on when you took this scene. So
that was from, I think the that's when she's like, she first got it basically.
Okay. So in the flashback or alternate timeline or whatever, they both get these, which you put them on your head and they let you fly. But in the current timeline, she finds one in a bush near one of the crash sites, but she doesn't know what it does. So she's been talking to it and fiddling with it and all other kinds of stuff to try and make it work. But yeah, so we've had quite a few crashes at this point because the weapons have been set up at this now all there's stations throughout Japan and they can shoot down pretty much anything. And sometimes the aliens survive and they run into these abandoned district areas and they're sending military teams in there to kill them, to eradicate them. As we talked about earlier, depending on which version you watch, you either know what the aliens are saying or what they're not saying, right? And by all appearances, what I got from the last episode is that the ship is stranded.
Yeah.
It's been stranded there for years. The aliens have been calling, like trying to make calls out for to get some. It's like they've got a flat tire and ended up hovering over Earth, and they don't have any way to get back.
And the first thing that happened to them was they got nuked. So
the first thing that happened is that they got nuked, and they're probably
getting stuck in the bad part of town, and someone like chucks a brick at your window and is like, "Well, we're not getting out. We're staying right here until the cops come or whatever."
Of all the places. So it's more than likely that they've been sending small recon out for supplies, if anything, because they have some they have a large population inside that ship.
Yeah, as we see when like 10,000 of them start falling out of the sky.
Yeah.
And I think episode 8, which is one of, I think, the most like harrowing images. It doesn't screenshot well because of the CG and Crunchyroll's bitrate. But just seeing, you know, just all of these bodies. And again, as an American, just seeing the bodies fall through the sky again, very 9/11 vibes, right? With the plane and everything.
Yeah. And this also, again, shows they didn't wait to clear commercial aircraft out of the airspace before firing on it. They didn't.
They almost killed those people.
Yeah, that whole plane could have crashed full of.
So it's not just America. Japan is more than willing to sacrifice its civilians.
So we see all of them fall out of the air, which is just ton, you know, of the there's survivors. And they try to flee into, again, the abandoned areas because they're supposed to, those areas are irradiated. And there's teams of vigilantes as well as military personnel going in there, and they just start killing them. And you can hear the aliens are subtitled in the Japanese version. So they're talking to each other and just like crying about the cruelty of it all.
Yeah.
Well, while that's happening, which is.
And maybe that's why they decided to translate it in episode 9. Or maybe they just got like word from up high that no, like you're supposed to be translating this too. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's really important because like. And even this soldier guy kind of gets. One of the more darkly satirical scenes where he's like, hey, I'm pretty sure those things were grieving when I killed them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think they can feel things. I think maybe killing them is making me feel bad.
And the other soldier's like,
you better not say anything about that.
Yeah. Superior's like, don't tell anyone that made you feel sad. Yeah. Don't tell anyone that they can get sad. Yeah. So our job is just to shoot things, which yeah, I mean,
follow orders.
Yeah. So, I mean, it looks like what we have is essentially an alien humanitarian crisis. Mm-hmm. Does the word humanitarian work when they're not?
It's the best we got.
Yeah, it's the best we got. It's best, right. It's a humanitarian crisis.
Sapientarian?
I don't know. Yeah. So a humanitarian crisis just hanging out over there. And anytime we don't know that they have a means of communication. In the alternate timeline, they did. They had things that like Karode and Oran could put in their ear so they could communicate and understand one another. But we haven't seen that used in this point in time. They're just small little dudes with big helmets, starving to death in the sky slowly, and then risking getting murdered if they come down to land. And we didn't really talk much about, but I guess we can just like come out and say, like, the first time this series like really got me is when Kiho died, because it was such a like she just was in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was another moment where I missed something. So I'm like, oh, did I miss the scene where it showed her? But no, like they were having a great time. They said good night, we'll see you tomorrow, and then they wake up the next morning and. Her face, you know, her name is among the list of victims of, you know, the latest alien ship crash.
Yeah.
Again, the crashes are, I mean,
that's due to human interference.
Yeah, they're being caused by us.
Yeah.
So like people are acting like, I mean, even her her shitty ex-boyfriend who gets all radicalized and starts going out to like murder the aliens on his own.
This, you know, evil Giga Kitaro.
I said the same. It's totally him.
It has to be on purpose. Yes. He has to look like Kitaro on purpose. Yeah. There's no way that's like a... Yeah. Yeah, it's too purposeful. Yeah.
It'd be like if someone came out in like a leopard print loincloth and we weren't supposed to think he was Fred Flintstone. Like, you know, he's ostensibly doing this as like vengeance against the aliens for the, but it's like, guys, we've been doing this to ourselves. They haven't done anything. I mean, they did give a potentially sociopathic child a magic gun wand, which was not a smart move.
Yeah, at least one of them was maybe
morally ambiguous
at some at point best. In time. Yeah, at best.
But obviously, I think, you know, I don't think any of these other guys deserve to get shot out of the sky or shot in the face or stabbed to death by a psychotic 18-year-old, right?
They look like Cabbage Patch Kid. That's like about the size that they are with their stubby little arms and legs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah.
And
so it's just, again, there are so many depressing parallels to so many world events.
Yeah.
When it comes to, you know, people making things so much worse and so much more violent and so much more dehumanizing than they ever needed to be, and then, you know, they say they're doing it in the name of love or in the name of their loved ones, and it's like, I don't think Kehoe would have wanted you to do any of this, man.
Kehoe broke up with you because your social media posts were freaking her out, man.
I know, like, she didn't want you to go even more, whatever, you know, deep down the radicalized, you know, anti-alien murder or anti-alien space murder rabbit hole,
yeah. So I mean, the show, it is very intense. I mean, even with its like very unique amalgamation of like humor and sci-fi and maybe time travel or whatever that's going on, it's very intense. And I think James and I have pretty well elaborated out that there's like a spider web of characters, right? Mm-hmm. So you can see how one character ends up affecting another character like 3 points down due to their strange connection. Like how we found out that the teacher that Kadore has a crush on, his ex-girlfriend, is the PR, like a middle-level PR woman for the military weaponry company, SES. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, their decisions led to Kehoe's death, which is why we've got her crazy ex-boyfriend murdering aliens and all these other sorts of things. And I would expect that to continue to expand. I'm most like the mysteries that we're still, I mean, we've just sort of gotten into what is really going on with the aliens, at least as far as, unless they, you know, pull more twists out of that. We still don't know what this shifter business is or what any of that stuff in the flashback is, if it's true to the current timeline and like something happened to erase memories and undo things that happened. Like if the alien had another gadget and then Oron used it to like reset or something so that they never saved that alien on the beach, for instance. Or if it is like, again, a completely alternate dimension where a different series of events happened. I don't know. I mean, there are so many other differences that like we talked about, like with the parents and the character types that maybe.
And it all, you know, it isn't even like Oron gained any new knowledge from that. She doesn't even remembering it. Like
she has
a moment where it's clear that she's seeing something, she's experiencing something, but she doesn't remember it. And it's not informing her decisions or it, you know, no one even knows that it happened other than the ghost guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, sure.
He calls him the ghost, but the alien, whatever he is.
Yeah. I guess also to catch up, like just real quick, they've all gotten to college now too, by this point. And we're starting to also see them try to integrate into adult life. Like quite a few of them have gotten part-time jobs, but Oron is kind of palling around with this the guy who runs the occult club, who seems harmless but is, you know, a weirdo, and for some reason the ghost alien has just been loitering around in his apartment when he's not there, sleeping in his bed and eating his food.
Yeah.
And so she encounters him there as well and is like, I've seen you before.
Yeah.
That's kind of where episode 9 leaves off. So
it reminds me, the show reminds me a lot of, what's his name? I just had it up. The author of Monster, Pluto, Naoki Urasawa.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That sense of, like, you know, very slow build, big cast of characters kind of coming together to tell this larger narrative. Although, honestly, I think this pace, this style of storytelling might be even more my speed.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's just something about it. It's almost like hypnotic. Like, it's,
yeah,
it's never boring, even though, you know, for a show called Dead Demons, Dead Destruction,
yeah,
you can count the number of scenes where something like blows up or whatever, like on one hand. It's not an action show at all.
No.
And its mysteries are taking, you know, their sweet time to unravel, but, you know, the characters are so good and the atmosphere is so good. Yeah. I think if you liked Monster, if you like Pluto, if you like shows like that,
yeah,
I think you will love this show. I think you should absolutely check it out.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I think it's like a character drama first and foremost, but there's like a lot going on with the world building and overall mysteries. I mean, even the title itself seems really weird compared to what we're talking about, but we're just like, it just started clicking with me a little bit because Kadore's nickname, which was
Demon,
bullied when she was, yeah, when she was a kid, was Demon. And now it's like, well, Dead Demon.
I mean, yeah, I thought that too. Right? I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah.
But then it's like, why is Dead there twice? And so now I'm,
what's like, the day? Like, yeah.
Yeah. I think they kind of touched on that in one of the episodes where, I don't know, I'd have to go back and watch, because I thought they like kind of dropped that sound at least once as a sound effect or something. So,
oh, did they? Okay.
I don't know. Yeah.
I will say, I don't recommend necessarily watching this whole show in like one sitting.
No, maybe do 3 episodes at a time. I think it's a good amount. I mean, I was impressed that I started watching it at 6 a.m. and didn't fall back asleep, because reading subtitles tends to make me do that if I'm at all sleepy. So it didn't this time, which is also, it's, yeah, extremely engaging, very well animated. I want to know how Inio Asano got so good about writing teenage girls.
Yeah. They're uncommonly well written.
Yeah.
I think Oh Maiden Singer Savage Season is a great example of like one of the standout shows where it's like, oh yeah, like this is what teenagers sound like. Or at least you believe that this is what teenagers sound like, which is what really matters.
Yeah. Nanigashi pointed out that da-da-da is what the alien said to make the flying, the like propeller bit fly when you put it on their head. So,
well, there we go.
Just something else to think about. All right. Okay, you guys, I'm flying out to Otakon tomorrow, and I won't be back at my home office until Monday. So until then, and then James has some stuff going on, so we'll keep you posted on our next podcast, but it may be a little bit. So until then, have a great rest of your week. Watch Dead Demons, Dead Destruction. It is super good.
Very, very good. Probably, I think it has become one of my top contenders for 2024. Like, it is, it's I enjoyed every second of it, so. And I'm going to keep watching it. So.
Yes, me too. All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.